Blog Talk Radio.
All right, hockey fans, welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa on Long Island. I'm in Vegas. We finally have a decent winning streak. Some good news in the Vegas Golden Knights Nation to talk about this week. We've been out for a couple weeks here, and it'll be good to catch up on what's been going on in Vegas. We got special guest Chris Wassel from the Host Fantasy Hockey X, and he writes at Dauber Prospects and the Sportsbook Wire. My NHL trade rumors. He's all over the place. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Wassel DFS. We're going to be talking some New Jersey Devils hockey with him. Vegas Golden Knights fans, we just got a good look at New Jersey. And as you know, they played a pretty good game. It's hard to imagine that they're the bottom dweller that they are. We're going to find out why when we talk to Chris later in the show. But first, let me bring in my Chris out on Long Island. Chris, good day to you, sir.
Good day to you. It's good to talk hockey with you again, my friend, and lots been going on with the Knights. Most of it very good, and they came through this New York area, kind of a I Love New York tour. It went 2-0-1. That's pretty good.
Not
played
too bad.
Heck of a game on Thursday. I got to watch the game afterwards as I was out and about. But,
good hockey game.
Started. Oh, very good. So, now the Knights are they're in third place. They're only a couple points behind the division leader in Arizona, I believe, or is it Edmonton now? And
Edmonton, Edmonton flipped last night. Okay, 39 Edmonton, 38 Arizona. That still seems weird to me to say. But the Knights are right there in third place with 35 points.
And, you know, there are a couple teams right on top of them, which feels like for everybody, right? There's so much parity in the league. And those teams like the Sharks and Vancouver, I believe, have a game in hand. But, you know, just keep stacking the wins and things are going well. So you tell me where you want to start. You want to start about this past week or the goaltending?
Well, yeah, let's talk about the winning streak. We haven't been able to talk about that at all so far this season. It seemed like for a while they were in the win two, lose one, and then they hit the skids with a season-long five-game losing streak. They come back. They go. They came off the losing streak with a goal 3-10. Now we're going back a ways. We haven't had a chance to chat about this in a while. But they go. They get the goal with 0.3 seconds left and win the game in overtime against Nashville. Then they come home with a good 2-1 victory against Arizona, which you got to win that game with Arizona in front of them in the standings. And then on the broadcast, on the Rangers game, I believe they were talking about that only 10 teams have gone through the New York trifecta and won all three games, Rangers, Devils, Islanders. So to get, five out of a possible 6 points winning against the Rangers pretty easily and coming from behind against New Jersey in a back-to-back situation. Subban played both of those games back-to-back, by the way, to put the finishing touches on a four-game win streak. And then Tuck with an absolute laser beam to tie the game with about 5 minutes left on the island. And then it seemed like they could not get the puck from the Islanders in 3-on-3. That's been one of the bugaboos for the Golden Knights this season, the overtime play. And then Marchessault takes the tripping penalty and 10 seconds later that it's ball game. But five-game unbeaten streak, we'll call it, unbeaten in regulation. So the panic meter is low now, sir. We're back down around a 1 or a 2. All of these games have been with Subban in net. Marc-Andre Fleury having left the team by now, everybody knows, and he is back with the team now due to the passing away of his father, Andre Fleury. So just condolences and thoughts go out to the Fleury family from here at the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Hopefully they're going to get through this. And he is back with the team. No word yet on if he will be playing against the Rangers tomorrow. Subban has stepped up and claimed his place as the Vegas Golden Knights backup goaltender. There's a definite Subban side and a Subban hater group in Golden Knights Nation. Hard to get too down on him after his recent play. He's looked better every game, playing back to back and winning both of those, turning away a number of high opportunity chances by the Islanders to keep that game close and get them to overtime and get the point. You know, I was texting you about that game earlier in the week, Chris, and it's like, well, you know, I know they're playing good and everything, but when you stack up everything against the Golden Knights, it's their third game in four nights, their last game of a road trip, which is historically a good spot to bet against a team as they're looking forward to getting back home. They're playing their backup goaltender, and they're playing against a team that's gone, was it 16-3-1? Over their last 19 games, something like that. All indicators said bet the New York Islanders that night, and they did get the win, but the Knights were fortunate to get a point. And now they get a couple days off before they play the Rangers tomorrow, early start on Sunday at 4 o'clock. So things looking up. Of course, you know, you could say that Arizona in that group of games is the best win. Nashville struggling in the part of the season. Rangers and Devils, obviously, in their rebuilding mode, you're kind of supposed to win those games. But when you have a backup goaltender playing back-to-back nights, you never know. Putting on a spirited effort after that against the Islanders. Up in Nassau, which is always a tough environment historically for teams to come in and play.
And I believe that was the Knights' first game ever at the Collie.
I believe you're correct.
The other two years they were in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and Gallant returning to his former stomping ground. I believe his first game as a player was up in on the island there. So all in all, a real good week and a half for the Golden Knights. The one loss in all of that situation is Cody Eakin goes down with an elbow to the head, and he's, I believe, listed week to week. And what that has done is allowed Cody Glass to slide over third line center, playing his natural position, and center line with Tuck and Carrier. And that line's been on fire since that was put together. I don't know what you do when Eakin's ready to come back. He's week to week, so you might not need to make that decision for a little while. But with a top nine that's playing as well as this top nine is, and they did make a trade, a fifth round pick for Stevenson, from the Washington Capitals, another center for the roster, and having Nick Waugh also being able to spend time, and Tomas Nosek could spend time on fourth line center duties. That led to some speculation in the last few days that the Golden Knights might be targeting a blue liner with Cody Eakin. And you talked to me this morning, Lyle Spector has pinpointed a possible trade target for the Golden Knights, right?
Yeah, Sammy, and we'll get Chris's view on the Devils and where they're at. Sammy Vatanen of the Devils, who I'm sure is going to be very sought after. If you notice, anyone who's a halfway above-average defenseman traded, even a pending UFA traded at the deadline, if you go back and look the last couple of years, you're talking about second and third-round picks. You know what I mean? Like, for instance, like Ron Hainsey, who's kind of a really good veteran, you know, back end guy, I think garnered over the last year or two like a couple third round picks kind of thing. So a guy like Vatanen, who's better than that, you're gonna get good draft capital, at least for him. Now if that's something Devils want to do, if they're looking more draft capital or player can help them moving forward sooner than later, we'll have to get that feel from Chris when he comes on in a couple minutes. But yeah, and I think the Subban, unfortunate news with Fleury stepping away from the team for the reasons that it was with his dad passing away, giving Subban a chance, like he's the guy to play a few games, settle in, not look over his shoulder, for lack of a better term. And, you know, we've harped on this, and now maybe he could be, you know, Fleury is still going to play the majority of the games, but, you know, put Subban in and feel good about it, be it at home or road and whatnot. So, you know, that's definitely a certain positive. The team has definitely been a little bit more consistent. I thought they played really well from what I saw against the Islanders. And
for sure.
I thought that was a terrific game just in general.
I did too.
But I thought both teams played really well. Could have went either way. It was I know that you mentioned that it was a bugaboo of the Knights. The Islanders have an excellent record in overtime, and they're very good on 3-on-3 in terms of puck handling. And
absolutely.
So,
that was keep away.
Know, yeah, that was keep away. So I like, you know, for the first time all year, I feel like the Knights are in a good position. But having said that, you know, things are so tight, and I could say the same thing about the Islanders. Things are, as all this good work that they've done, things are so tight that, you know, if you have a bad week, all of a sudden you could be on the verge of being out of the playoff bubble. So,
yep.
I mean, that's just how much the parity and where all the teams stack up, both in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. So they got to keep on They, you know, they, like you mentioned, they have the Rangers coming to town tomorrow. Then the Hawks come in, who've been better than expected. Won a game, even though giving up a big lead the other night in Boston, but still came back to win it. And then they go on the road to St. Louis and Dallas back to back next week, end of this coming week. So
right.
not an easy four pack there. So let's if they can play that consistent game, they'll have their team in the right position, I believe.
I agree. I think you got to win the Rangers game and the Blackhawks game, and then you get one out of two on St. Louis and Dallas, and that's a great week. If you can make six out of 8 points on this next four games, I almost think that's going to they'll be real close, if not in first place in the division, I think. I think Edmonton's starting to show a couple chinks in the armor. They did get a win last night, 2-1 against the Los Angeles Kings. Coyotes are the team, I think, that are maybe the team that is going to be able to hold on and keep playing this brand of hockey. So consistency, as you said, Chris, is going to be the name of the game for the Golden Knights. They've fought their way back into it, and now you got to keep getting two out of three, three out of four. Put a cup, you know, you have a 5-game unbeaten streak. They can get the Rangers and the Blackhawks. That's going to go extend out to 7 games unbeaten, and you know the confidence is growing with this group. They know now that they can win with Malcolm Subban in net on any given night, home or road, that they will be competitive, and that's going to, you know, we always harp on about Marc-Andre Fleury getting his rest, and Subban seems to be better the more he plays. He seems to get in a groove. He seems to find his rhythm. He seems to keep more focus, as it were. There was an interesting stat they talked about in the shootout game against Arizona. Was he's never lost a shootout, and the goal that he gave in that shootout was the first goal he's ever given up in a shootout. So that's a good sign for the Knights, who are having trouble in overtimes and shootouts so far this season. So one thing to go back real quick, Chris, before Chris Wassel joins us. If they're not interested in another expiring contract in Cody Eakin, going back to talk about the Sammy Fontenot trade, you know, we being the Golden Knights, hold the New Jersey Devils' second round pick in 2021 and their third round pick coming up in 2020 from the Nikita Gusev deal, for an expiring contract in Sammy Fontenot is a $4.75 million cap hit. They don't have that much cap space. So if you do send Eakin over there, another expiring hit, he's 3.875, I believe. So that they do have cap space to make that deal. And if they return either next year's third or the following year's second, you got to think that might be enough to get that kind of a deal done.
Yeah, I don't
and
know.
Not
like
hurt
I
their
said,
hurt their own draft
it,
picks.
Right. Those kind of good, solid defensemen, I'm not trying to make out Vatanen to be a first-pairing guy, but they're very wanted commodities come the trade deadline, come, you know, New Year. And everybody needs those guys. And there's a lot of teams contending for the playoffs. So I'm not saying that thinking – there's nothing wrong with that thinking, but – he's going to be, if he's put out there, he's going to be a wanted man. And I don't know how deep that blue line list is going to be. I've studied it a little bit. It's not going to be overloaded. So that's just something to consider. It'll really come down to the market. What you're saying does make a lot of sense. And also, even though he's not having the statistical year that he had last year, he would also be a very valuable commodity for a team out there. I could think of one on Long Island who could use some center help, although that definitely
and a great penalty killer.
Yeah, so you know, it's kind of deal like, let's say you can get a 2-4 over 2 years and throw in Eakin, and then you can flip Eakin, and then you wind up getting, you know, 3 draft picks, you know, for the, at the end of the day. So that's something to think of, think about, and it works out from the night standpoint as well.
The good thing about that is that Vaughn is a right-hand shot, and they have one on the roster right now. So I would let Nate Schmidt slot back over to the left side if they play with him and play more of his natural position as well. Really something to keep an eye on. But now that we have Chris Wassel here, I'm sure we'll be able to get into that in a minute. Chris is joining the Vegas Hockey Podcast to talk about some New Jersey Devils hockey. Chris, welcome to the show, buddy. Long time.
Good afternoon. It's been a long time, hasn't it?
Absolutely. We appreciate you taking the time coming on and talking some Devils hockey with us. Well, we did see the Devils this week in Vegas Golden Knights Nation. It was kind of a back-and-forth affair watching that game. Is that kind of the nutshell of the New Jersey Devils season so far? Is maybe a microcosm of the Vegas Golden Knights game, where they come out, they're competitive, they even take the lead at one point during the game, but then for some reason not able to close the deal?
That's pretty much the normal for New Jersey, unfortunately. At times they're either at times flat out competitive, or they just completely duck huck into the water. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, they are very, very much a bipolar, sort of a just all over the place type of team, and that's the reality. When your defense is as convoluted as it is, and the system that goes with it hasn't helped much. Anytime you try to play a system that minimizes chances with a team defense that's not very good, results can be disastrous. And then, of course, what really doesn't help New Jersey often is their penalty kill, which has been just horrid all season. You can't give up some of the chances that they have on the penalty kill and expect to have a penalty kill that's above 80%. You just can't. And you add the two of those together, and you get, unfortunately, what is a team that often has to score 3, 4, 5 goals to win, and most times they cannot.
Well, with that, let me just go off the reservation here a little bit. We may have a pretty solid penalty killer for you. There's some rumor talk here in Las Vegas the last couple of days that there may be a Sammy Vatanen, Cody Eakin deal being rumbled about. And I don't know if that's just obviously getting to be that time of year where these things start to come to a head. Both have expiring contracts. Eakin's about $1 million less than Vatanen. And if, let's say that the Golden Knights want to return either the second round pick or the third round pick that you sent their way in the Nikita Gusev deal, how would that strike Devils Nation as far as being able to get Vatanen out and still have a couple future picks coming back, and then a good penalty killer for the rest of the season?
It's pretty close to what I'm hearing, actually. There's There's some rumblings. Shoot, there's a lot of rumblings going on right now.
Right.
Unfortunately, I think my phone is going to explode at some point this week if what could happen actually does happen. So, but that is one of the deals that's being floated around. I know, General Manager Ray Shero is actively on the phones because clearly something popped through my phone about 11:30 this morning. That was way off from what normally you'd expect on a typical Saturday when you're going through rumors. For those that don't know, I work with Lyle Richardson and Mark Eason of My NHL Trade Rumors quite a bit. Kind of in a way co-run the site sort of in a nice way, digging through a lot of the rumors out there. And look, you know, you're in Vegas, you're gonna see a lot more of this. In the next particularly week to 10 days, because after the 20th, it all goes silent for about a week to week and a half with the holiday roster series. So something's going to get done. Your rumors are going to start to heat up right about 2 to 3 hours ago. And that's exactly what has happened. So, he could be headed this way. I can't say return wise what will happen, but I can say that the two players have been talked about as a possibility for each other.
All right, that's almost a little bit of breaking news here, Chris. Lisa, here on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Yeah, that's kind of been what we've been hearing over here as well. Now there's another guy who might garner more of a trade market than Vatanen, although I think that would be a real good piece for the Golden Knights, considering they've struggled a little bit on the blue line so far this year. Is Ray Shero in a position? Taylor Hall's got to go. He's come out and said that he won't negotiate till the end of the season. This is starting to sound a lot like the Vera situation. Is this, if they can't talk him into at least negotiating, does he got to go?
Well, it looks like not only has he got to go, but it looks like he might be going.
Is that right?
Yeah, there's definite rumblings that if it doesn't happen before the holiday a roster freeze, that it's going to at some point happen before the trade deadline. There's just a feel of inevitability, even before John Hines was fired earlier this week. It looked flat out at times like Taylor Hall had checked out. It's looked like that a few times this season, to be fair. And look, he doesn't like to lose. I understand that. Nobody does.
Right.
But there's just certain fundamentals and things that and plays that you'd see Taylor Hall easily connect on that he has not been all season. And you can't just say that it's, oh, because of a low shot percentage, or it's because of bad luck, or it's because of this. It's because he's legitimately frustrated for whatever reason. And, you know, I'm never going to get into a player's head in a month of Sundays. So I can't really say if it's one reason or another, but I can say there's something definitely there that is bubbling to the surface. And now it's really just a question, guys, of can it get done in the next, well, in this case, you figure the Avalanche play the Devils next week. Just saying, they play next Friday. They play on the 13th.
Is that one of the teams you're hearing going hard in on Hall?
That is one team that is definitely hammering in on Hall. Now there's a couple different returns that are being bandied about. So again, it's a very fluid situation. So we can't really say what is close to becoming an actual return in this trade, because there's kind of an A and B scenario that's still being floated around. It's also why Taylor Hall is playing tonight and not being quote unquote sat out. So when you look at it that way, it's understandable for, you know, reader, listener, and et cetera to go, okay, well, there is something going on, but we're still at the beginning stages of this. And it just all affords and funnels to this inevitable point that the Devils are at least below the surface trying to get something done now as opposed to later.
Hey, Chris. Chris here. So just piggybacking off that Taylor Hall thing and in terms of the looking for the return of Shiro's mindset, because it seems to me his mindset this offseason, he made some under-the-radar bold moves, trading a lot of really good draft picks away. Didn't get the headlines that it probably should have because he didn't trade away first-round picks, but he traded away a number of second- and third-round picks, and the Gusev trade, the P.K. Subban trade, and, you know, signing Wayne Simmons, granted it was a one-year deal, to try to kind of force-feed this year to be contending for playoff year, and maybe all that was to convince Taylor Hall to stay. And all that has really not worked out very well. So given all that, is he now going to kind of flip the script and say, all right, I tried that. It didn't work. We're farther away than I thought we are. I'm going to be looking at a future assets package for the Vatanens, for Taylor Hall. And, you know, usually for a top player like a Hall who's a pending unrestricted free agent, we're talking first-round pick, you know, a top 50, let's call it a top 50 prospect, and, you know, maybe a sweetener or two added in there. Is that what you expect Shiro to get? And then just another point on that, because I know you do a lot of work for the draft, and a good friend of the show, Russ Cohen, and listening to some of his stuff about this coming draft, it seems like this is a very deep draft, kind of reminding of the Barzell, Kyle Connor, Travis Konecki, Brooke Bosner draft. I think that was 2015, if memory serves correct. Maybe it was getting old. And so teams are going to be reluctant to trade their first-round picks. Now, Taylor Hall's a different set of encyclopedias, but I know it's a long-winded question, but putting all that in a blender for me, well, what are your thoughts on everything I just said?
Okay, so what is in play and what isn't right now? Now, we can't list every part because it's all moving around, but the idea is the 2020 first round pick from Colorado is definitely in play. There may be a condition attached to it, but that at this time that's not, you know, not confirmed just yet, but it's there. There are a few scenarios that are floating around as far as the top, who the top prospect may be. It may be Connor Timmins. It may still be Bowen Byram, although that's looking a little less of a possibility right now, but that can change. And then you would have, yes, you would have your one or two sweeteners along the way. Now, what has been interesting a little bit, and it's played as a bit of a thorn in the side of this potential deal, perhaps, is the fact that Miles Wood may be involved in some way. So, you know, there's a lot of dynamics involved. New Jersey clearly is hitting the reset button here, and they had to. The biggest problem with New Jersey, and we had said it from the beginning of the year, was the system involved in the first place by John Hines, and you combine that with a below average team defense, and you do have the recipe for what could have been a really bad start. And sure enough, it happened. Did anybody expect it to be this bad? No, no. You couldn't have foreseen some of the bizarre, I wouldn't say incidents, but just examples of just bad luck. You have so many players that are on ridiculously low shooting percentages right now. You have players missing wide open chances that normally never would. I mean, I'm not just going to say Taylor Hall. I mean, Kyle Palmieri should have 17 or 18 goals right now, to be honest. I know he has 10. I understand that, you know, not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but he probably should have 17 or 18 right now, and he would even admit that as well. He's had a lot of chances. You know, Jack Hughes probably should have 15 or 20 points at least right now or more, just based on some of the chances. I mean, he had 5 or 6 scoring chances last night alone, and none of them went in. None. The one the one goal actually wasn't much of a scoring chance by him. It was just a simple pass. He got lucky, as he put it. So you have this perfect storm of where New Jersey, unfortunately, is not near where they thought they would be. They thought they would probably be 4 or 5 games above 500. Instead, they're 4 or 5 below. And as a result, in this league, if you're 5 below 500 and it's getting darn close to Christmas, you're thinking you might be a seller if you're not St. Louis. This isn't a case of a team that's going to be able to turn this around overnight. This is a much, much bigger problem than what St. Louis had. St. Louis had really just – they just needed above-average goaltending and consistent scoring. New Jersey needs a heck of a lot more than that. They need a lot of things to be fixed and a lot of tweaks to their system. And this is something that takes too much time to where you could say, oh, a playoff berth is definitely a possibility still. It's not. Not to be the bearer of bad news, but the reality is that's it. They're not making the playoffs. But to be competitive for the rest of the season, the team does need to play a looser style, which is going to lead to even more chances, which is why they're going to have to sell some of their assets to get some of those second and third round picks back, which they can easily do because they do have enough sellable assets. Your Vantans, your Woods, even if he wants to waive a certain clause, Travis Ajak may want to go. Does Andy Green want to waive his to have a chance at a championship? You know, he is in his mid-30s. He's on the other side. He would be a nice penalty killer for a team out there. You know, $5 million. It's not horrible. It's not great. But, you know, prorated, it looks a heck of a lot better. That's for sure. So that would be a close-to-the-deadline deal. And that's how often, you know, we look at it as far as process for a team that thought they were aiming for this, and instead they got that.
So, Chris, what have you seen in terms of the development this year? You know, obviously Jack Hughes is literally a kid, but for both Hughes and Hischler, in terms of the season?
Well, the big problem, at least for me with Hughes, and you saw it a few times last night with some plays here and there, he still has to gain probably about 10 or 15 pounds. That's about right, and that's going to happen in time. His year had the same kind of thing in his rookie year. Hughes is going through it now at times. He does get knocked around a little bit more than he probably should. He has enough speed that he can avoid most of these hits. But I get it. He's trying to make the hockey play. You look at some of the out and out talent, and you're almost mesmerized by what he can do on the ice. I mean, I'm a scout on this, that, and whatever. But as a fan, I'm watching last night, and I'm going, wow, this is pretty good. I mean, you're watching this guy just outright walk Patrick Kane for like 20 seconds. I mean, not many players do this. And, you know, yes, and unfortunately led to the Devils hitting a post. But, I mean, the chance was, I mean, it was great. It was grade A quality, and it was an indication of, wow, this kid's going to be all right. And, you know, as for his year, it's been unfortunate this year because really they haven't played that much at the same time. You know, Hughes had the bone bruise that kept him out for about a week or so. His year's been sick a couple times, you know, was banged up a little bit, has the flu still. At least as of this afternoon. So his playing status wasn't quite known as of before I went on the air with you guys. I'm sure it's probably being cleared up as I speak, because that's always how it happens, you know, when we're talking about this. But you know, these are two excellent centers that New Jersey can definitely build off of. Maybe not in the way of, say, building off of Taylor Hall, but you can build off these guys and acquire enough talent where if you get one more blue chip player, they should be just fine. So again, does it horribly suck that New Jersey's probably going to have to wait another couple of years at least.
Yeah.
Is it the end of the world? No, because we've pretty much been waiting since 2012 anyway. So it's what's another couple of years, to be honest.
Chris, before we hand you back off to Mark here, what have you seen out of Gusev? I mean, clearly he has a lot of skill, but it doesn't seem like things are working out well with him. Is this a guy who has a lot of skill, but is one thing to have a lot of skill, it's another thing to be a really good winning hockey player?
I knew this was coming. The answer is this. He's actually a lot better player than people probably realized. He's actually looked good in New Jersey. Was he put in ideal situations at first? No, and that's part of the reason why John Hines is no longer coach of the Devils. Unfortunately, I still believe, for as good of a guy as Hines is, the pressure got to him. The pressure clearly got to him. He did not handle adversity very well in his time in New Jersey, and that's a lesson that anybody can learn. It doesn't matter what profession, and if you're a coach, a scout, a writer, player, etc., you have to be able to handle pressure. And unfortunately, Coach Hines was not able to really do that in New Jersey for more than a short stretch here and there. And his handling of Gusev in particular was poor. You have to let guys play sometimes. And having them basically skate on eggshells doesn't help anybody, and it does make a team legitimately worse. It really does, and the results are there. I mean, there's tangible results out there in New Jersey season this year to suggest that definitely players were playing with a sort of a look of fear on their over their shoulder, like, if I make a mistake here, I may not play much the next game or even the next shift. And that's kind of what happened with Gusev a little bit. He did go back, spend a little bit of time with Patrick Elias, a few better two-way forwards in the history of the NHL than Patrick Elias out there.
That's true.
And that's a good guy to learn off of. And Elias is a pretty good offensive player in his day as well. And when you combine the two, you go, okay, you see a difference now. And particularly in Gusev's play over the last, say, 6 to 8 games, where maybe the points aren't always there, but the effort, the scoring chances, and the defensive effort has arguably been better than even guys like Taylor Hall. And that's a welcome sight to see, because if you have Gusev for another year and a half, you figure, or a little bit more than a year and a half under contract, You want to see improvement at least. And so far, we Devil fans have seen enough improvement. I mean, aside from the goose chance and such. But the overall level of play has risen as the year has gone on from him. I haven't seen some of the lollygagging and lackadaisical play that you occasionally saw from him over in the KHL every so often.
And that kind of makes sense when you're coming in at, I mean, let's face it, you're a unknown commodity in the NHL, even though, you're record-setting MVP, led your team to the Gagarin Cup final. You're still kind of an undersized winger. And during the broadcast of the Devils game, they were talking about, well, the KHL tape measure and scale are a little bit heavier than the mm-hmm. tape measures they used in the NHL. A couple inches shorter and about 15 pounds lighter listed in the NHL press book, right?
Yep,
kind of like the old school.
The old 215 rule, as they used to call it. Two inches taller and 15 pounds heavier.
It's like they got the tape measure from the old UNLV basketball team when Larry Johnson was listed at 6'8", 225, and maybe about 6'4", amongst friends, who's counting. But he could have signed with the Golden Knights for a couple million bucks and came in and just played a rookie season. But we all know his salary demands and basically forced the trade to the Devils. Effort is the one thing that you would expect out of somebody who came into the NHL with a $4.5 million salary demand, having never set foot in a North American rink, really. So at least you're starting to see a consistency in that regarding Nikita Gusev.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, you know, people have to understand. It's like, and he will bulk up a little bit. I know one of the jokes in the locker room was like, well, he can't really bench press much. It's like, oh boy, we're going to have something with the pull-ups again, you know, like with Casey Mittelstadt. I hope not. But yeah, I'll tell you my own funny story real fast. A year ago, I could not do a pull-up for the life of me, like about a year and a half ago. And now it's just like, oh, okay, no sweat at all. It's like, yeah, give Gusev time. He'll be fine. He's a fast learner, which also helps immensely here. And people probably have underestimated the cerebral quality of his game the most because, again, you know, unknown commodity coming in. And you go, well, you know, what can he really do? And now, about 30 games into the season, and we kind of see, you know, little bits and pieces of, hey, well, maybe, you know, this is going to pan out, at least enough for New Jersey that, Gusev's not only a fan favorite already, but he has a heck of a release on his shot. It really is as advertised. It's almost like a Joe Sakic type of snapshot that you don't see very often. So now it's just a question of getting him in situations where he can A, use that shot, B, use his speed, and C, not get clocked around like a human pinata. That's kind of where you're at with, you know, not only Gusev, but a couple of these other players that have come up from New Jersey, like Jesper Boqvist, for example. Part of why Boqvist has been put into the top six is to give him a little bit of protection. Bottom six doesn't offer you any protection at all, unfortunately, in the NHL. And, you have to see what some of these players can do, and New Jersey is now going to get that chance. That's always a good thing.
Well, all right, Chris, thanks for joining us. Real quick, you also do some time with Dauber Prospects, and Chris touched on the draft a little bit. Who are some players that people may not have on their radar at this point in time, but that you see right now rising up and may force their way into a first-round selection here coming up in the amateur draft?
It's been fun to watch because at least for me, draft wise, you know, you look at the Lafreniere's and it's almost downright hypnotic to watch some of these guys. And I go, wow, it's like, man, I'm covering this. I'm pretty damn lucky. But it's funny because it's like you see the leader, you see some of these guys, and you're looking at them. It's like, man, this is gonna change a lot between now and June. You're just about the 6 month mark between now and draft day. So I talked to the draft analyst Steve Corianos the other day. We're in communication at least once or twice a week, not as often as I would like because life gets in the way, unfortunately.
No kidding.
here's a great example of a guy that's jumped over the last year. Tim Stutzel, who is a German prospect forward, was probably like about 40, a year ago, maybe 40 or 50. Moved up to 23 in the summer. And as crazy as this sounds, maybe a top three or four pick when all is said and done. So he's a guy.
Wow.
So he's a guy that was probably early mid second round at the start of the calendar year, and now he looks like he's poised to, three, four, maybe five. And that again, this is where it often gets interesting. You have looks and players. You have like the Jan Misaks of the world. who's been pretty consistent and been passed by, ironically, yeah, you guessed it, our German prospect who just came out of nowhere, and this is often what happens with these drafts. You look at the Drysdales of the world. The rankings are fun. They always are. But here's where I always have a good little chuckle. One player from the USHL I want people to watch out for. And I'm going to get this immediately, so I'll just throw it out of the way. Alex LaFerriere from Des Moines in the USHL. And it's not just because he's from New Jersey and I've scouted him for the last, I would say, 4 to 5 years.
All right.
He is going to be really good and be right near the first round. He's one guy that you're definitely going to watch for. He's Harvard bound. And you will see him at the upcoming World Junior A Challenge, which is coming up very, very fast. Often people forget that this often comes right before that big World Junior Championship that everybody talks about every year right after Christmas. So you have that. You have the Nick Maliks of the world. Another guy that I like, I don't know if he's going to get to the first round, but maybe he does, is Maverick Bourque from Shawinigan of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Often scoring from the queue gets skewed a little bit, no pun intended, just because it's the queue. It does have a little bit of a reputation on rankings analysis of being a little bit lower than, say, the WHL, USHL, and other leagues. And then, of course, there's Seth Jarvis from Portland in the WHL, who is just if anybody has watched or streamed WHL coverage, just watch Portland and Seattle play each other. Just watch Seth Jarvis versus Ty Smith, and just watch those two players and enjoy just the ability of the fluid skating, and both have an excellent wrist shot that often get overlooked. So there's that. And of course, finally, I would be remiss to forget Yoni Yermo, who has been making the rise for Jokerit. He's playing for their under 20 team right now. At this time, who literally looks like an NHL ready player already at his age, not even 18 just yet, but he has that part of rangy NHL player around six, tall enough, around 205 pounds or so, depending on your tape measure and weight scale again, which is not, you never quite know. So there's a lot out there. And another one too. Goalie, yeah, I know. Goalies rarely go in the first round, but this guy might go in the second, and that would be Finland's Joel Blomqvist, who has just given up a ridiculous goal or less in almost half of his starts in the Finnish junior leagues, which translates to like a .932 save percentage. So even though he's not facing that many shots, he's been able to make a ton of saves.
Well, all right, Chris, thanks for taking the time to join us here on this Saturday morning or afternoon, wherever everybody is. You can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris Wassel DFS. That's WASSELDFS for all of his content on the web. Anything else you want to get out there where they can find your stuff?
Absolutely. Twitter is probably the best way, just because I'm able to answer questions in a quick and now a little bit longer of a manner. I can sit there and not just have to write 140 characters all the time, which is kind of nice. But also, obviously, I do a lot of work over a lot of the daily fantasy sites out there, such as Awesomeo, Rotoballer. I do stats work for NumberFire as well, and betting analysis. I do a little bit of betting consultant work over for Odds Checker, a nice little overseas site that better known as Sky Sports. And, naturally, and the most obvious, I do a little feature work for a little small conglomerate of us hockey writers that you may know pretty well. Lyle Richardson, James Murphy, Bob Duff. There's quite a few of us. Andrew Berkshire, you know, a couple guys from the hockey news, you know, and the name of the company is called Featured. So it's not spelled the normal way. It's F-E-A-T-U-R-D. So we get a few jokes here and there, and it's like, oh, is it a bunch of turds? But no, it's actually quite an it's an excellent little site where a lot of us hockey writers are able to branch out a little bit and do some things that are a little out of the ordinary in the hockey world. So we do a lot, you know, do a lot, but also get a lot out of things too. So, and obviously, I'd be remiss if I said didn't shout this out. A special thanks to Mark Eason again and Lyle Richardson for all their work that they do over at my NHL Trade Rumors. If it wasn't for Mark, I wouldn't have this kind of job where I'm able to do this, and I'm extremely grateful every day for it.
Well, all right. If any of these rumors do come true regarding the Golden Knights and the Devils, we're going to have to reach out to you and get a quick breakdown on any trade that may happen between the Knights and the Devils. Thanks again for taking the time, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks again, guys. Anytime you need me, just drop a line.
Copy
good,
that.
Good talk to you, Chris.
All right, Chris. Lots of rumor break. It got into more of the rumor mill than I thought. We had a little breaking news there with possibly the Hall Colorado connection, and he's hearing the same thing as a Vatanen for maybe Eakin and picks or some package coming the other way to the Golden Knights, and kind of what we expected about the Devils, where it seems like it might get to the point where everybody is in play this season, sir.
Yeah, well, I think this is a rebuild, and you know they have Hischler, they have Hughes. They're going to have a top pick, top 10 pick this draft. We'll see where that falls to build around, and then you know it appears, and you know the Metro might be playing better than people thought that it would. So they're a couple of years away at least, and it's got to be centered around building from that. So as many draft picks, and like I said, they've traded a lot of picks, you know, away. They traded the Subban deal. I want, you know, not all in this coming draft, but you know, in the next couple of drafts, and that really hasn't worked out well. And the Subban deal and the Gusev deal, as an example, I think they gave up 3 future draft picks for Subban and 2 future draft picks. Gusev. So that's a lot of picks. They had a lot of picks in their possession, but they moved a lot of them. So, yeah, they're going to have to, like I said, Colorado's a team that has a lot of cap space. They have a lot of prospects, so they're a good fit. They're in the Western Conference, so there's from that aspect as well, trading out of conference. But they have to do the best to get the best deals they can for these players and have their eye towards the big picture.
Yeah, well, especially in the Eastern Conference where there's so many good teams up at the top, and even a team like Pittsburgh, who I believe currently is not in a playoff spot.
No, they are. They are the
did they get
the
in?
Number one. Yeah, they're the number one wild card right now. They've had a good run. But, yeah, no, you're right. The Eastern Conference is ridiculously – oh, by the way, the Devils do not – with all those trades mentioned, the last point to wrap them up, they don't have a second or third round pick this draft. So, and they don't have a second round pick for 2021. So they traded a lot of draft capital. So they need to get a lot of draft capital back in rounds 2 and 3. And obviously if they can add a second first round pick – that would be smart. But, I mean, you know, you take a look of how tight things are, and not that the Islanders lose a couple of games, they're going to fall out of the playoff bubble. But, I mean, let's use the Islanders as an example from this standpoint. The Islanders so far this year are 19-6-2, which is an incredible record, right? They have 40 points. They've played a couple less games, more so than that, with a lot of the teams in the Eastern Conference. But 19-6-2, but they're only 3 points ahead of the Flyers, 4 points ahead of the Penguins, who are in the wild card one spot, and 5 points ahead of the Canes. who are in the second wild card spot. Now, they do have a cushion for the first team outside of the playoffs, which ironically is the Rangers. So they have 9 points behind them. And like I said, the Islanders have games in hand, at least 2 games in hand on a lot of these teams. In the case of the Capitals, who the Islanders, by the way, are 9 points behind for first place. They have 4 games in hand. But my point being is, you would think, like, with a record of 19-6-2, that, you know, you would be kind of on easy street from the standpoint of, if you had a couple of bad weeks, you know, you wouldn't have to look over your shoulder. But that's just how the Eastern Conference is playing right now. And, you have the Rangers, Buffalo outside the picture at 31 points, Toronto at 30 outside, and then our Tampa Bay Lightning there, Dan Harrigan, at 29. So, the Eastern Conference is a bit nutty right now.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit, and I just wanted to get your reaction on whether I'm a little green to start bringing this up, but we might have a 50-50 watch this season. So what do you think about Pasternak with 25 goals in 29 games? If he gets, let's say he gets one or two tonight and he's at 26, 27 heading into game 30, am I a little green in starting the 50-50 clock on this?
That's crazy. Good as he's been, he's still considerably off the pace. I mean, so basically he's 4 games behind a goal a game, which of course Mike Bossy did back in the day, 50-50. And
then there's that 50-39 guy. But let's not go there.
But I wouldn't say you're a little green. It's important to note, but it just shows you how hard it is to do 50-50. That he's basically the next 4 games, he would have to score 2 goals a game to get on pace, which is very, very hard to do. But it is amazing what he is doing up there.
And that goes for all. I mean, when you look at, like, and you mentioned how well the Islanders have played this so far in the season. For Boston to have 46 points in 29 games, Washington to be sitting at 49 points with only 31 games played. Now the Islanders still have 4 games in hand on Washington, 2 games in hand on Boston, and they're sitting at 4 points. And after 27 games, but still looking up. The Islanders have only lost 6 games in regulation all season, and still looking up in the overall standings. It's going to be a goodness gracious. If you're trying to get into the playoffs in either one of those divisions, and I mean, you're Florida, you're, and I was talking with this with a buddy at work. Boston's at 46 points, okay? Montreal is second place with 32 points in the division. That's free. Right behind them in the preview show, Florida, I didn't think they'd be in third place with 31 points and points in the hole on the Boston Bruins, sir.
Well, the Bruins have only lost 3 games in regulation, and the Capitals in 29 games, and the Capitals have only lost 4 games in regulation in 31
ridiculous
games. So that means, so they're picking up a point. Worst case, at least, that, you know, that's why it's very, very hard, you know, to catch these teams. And in fact, Boston has not lost a game in regulation at home. They've lost 5 games in overtime. And that's another part of this whole equation is, like, roughly, give or take, 30% of the games go to extra time, which means 30% of the games are a 3-point contest, which makes it harder to climb the ladder. I think it's going to be wild. And, you know, some of these other teams, I mean, Toronto looked like with the coaching change, they were getting on a good roll. And now they've lost a couple in a row. And Tampa looked like came back from Sweden, thinks they were going to get rolling, and they've struggled a bit as well. So you have to wonder, you know, the Flyers have been on a nice run recently. So you have to wonder how this is all going to play out. But the bottom line is there's just so many, you know, at least good teams and above that you got to keep winning.
Yeah, 100%. And that'll circle back to how we were finishing up the Golden Knights segment. Before that little winning streak, they were 16th in the league. And they've, you know, you win four in a row or five games unbeaten where you have, what, 9 out of a possible 10 points. They've only moved up to 13th overall. And the two teams behind them have two games in hand, that being Minnesota and Vancouver. Consistency, the season seems, I mean, obviously you want to play consistent hockey and so on and so forth. The St. Louis right there with 42 points and the Islanders as well. There's a good chance they're going to run away and hide with their respective divisions. And then you start looking at it. There's a whole host of teams from now talking league wide from 16 to 6 is 5 points. So like you said, a good week may not get you up into that top 8, top 9 where you're a little more comfortable. A bad week and you're going to be on the outside looking in, especially in that Eastern Conference.
And you'll be interesting to see what that means in terms of who's going to be the sellers and who's going to be the buyers. I mean, there's going to be, I would tend to think that would limit how many sellers there are, which will help a team like New Jersey, who's in massive sell because everyone, you know, wants to buy. Or, you know, how many teams take a step back and say, you know what, we're really not this good. We should sell this asset at this particular time because we can get a lot for them and take the long view along those lines. So I'll be curious to see. But someone like Taylor Hall, there's not going to be many Taylor Halls on the market between now and the trade deadline. So given all those givens, New Jersey, we think, would do very well for him in a package. Now, then comes some intangible. Like, I'll give you a case in point, although it's kind of tricky because in terms of long-term. But let's say the Islanders, who could use another big-time scorer, step up with a big offer. For a Taylor Hall, is New Jersey going to be willing to deal with a team in their own division, let alone in the area? Now, Devils Islanders are not, it's not like Islanders Rangers to put it for people outside of this market. But, I you know, they still have a lot of fan base. But if they can get the best big package from them, would they do that? You know, is that some, or are they going to eliminate certain teams and say, we want to trade him to a Colorado, we want to trade him to a St. Louis, or, you know, whatnot. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts with this.
Yeah, I say all things being equal, they'd rather get him into the West if they get a comparable package. I would look for that. I know you want you'd like to keep him somewhere near that metropolitan area north of the city, I would believe, but I would look for them to. Chris was just talking about how he's been getting some hot and heavy information this morning where the Colorado deal may be something to look for sooner rather than later. I kind of, as much as I hate to say it, think that that might be his ultimate landing spot if they can agree on a package.
Yeah, no, I know. I think they're a big favorite. Like I said, is from a cap standpoint, they feel like they probably can make a big run. You know, the danger is to keep in mind is, you know, trading a big package for a guy who's a rental. And clearly, you know, at this point, you know, all bets are going to be off with Taylor Hall. Not only is it going to be a Mark Stone situation who re-signed once, you know, signed the deal once the deal was done. I think he's going to look at the offseason. He has an agent who pushes his players to explore all their options. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And then he's going to get traded to a new market. They'll ride it out. They'll give everything they have, hopefully for a team pushing for a big Stanley Cup run. But as we had Chris Moore on once said, only one team gets to win the Cup. So to give up a big package of assets for a rental, you know, is that's not an easy thing to do.
No, for sure, for sure. Well, we're just about out of time this week, Chris. You got anything on tap for us coming up? We're going to get to our midweek review show, hopefully this Wednesday. We'll be heading into the St. Louis-Dallas portion of this week's schedule, so that'll be interesting to see where they are. What else we got going on?
Next Saturday, we're going to have Mark Scheig on to talk a little Eastern Conference hockey.
Nice.
We'll have to figure out our schedule the rest of the month with the holidays and such. But we'll have some good shows for everyone as well. And then in the new year, as Chris alluded to, his partnership with Lyle Richardson of Spectre Hockey, we're going to have Lyle on first Saturday in January, and then the following week in January, we're going to have Russ Cohen on. So talk a little Flyers, a little draft. Lyle, of course, to paint the picture with the upcoming trade deadline, which at that point will be about 6 weeks away. So we got a lot of good stuff going on with upcoming shows.
All right, that is good stuff. Well, hopefully we'll be here, talking to everybody Wednesday night, schedules and health permitting.
Yes.
But until then, for Chris, I'm Mark, and we're gone. We'll be right back.